Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things. Top Gear. It's over.
Well...
Isn't it? I mean, I figured it was. We know people...
Well, I think a lot of people assumed, yes. I mean, I hate to dally in facts rather than the absolute horse shit that I've seen being talked about Top Gear in the last few days since that announcement on Tuesday last week. But there are certain things that are would suggest there is going to be no Top Gear in the foreseeable future. One of them being they've disbanded the production team because... they've had to. There's nothing for them to do. The show was on pause ever since Freddie Flintoff had his accident last year. So they've gone to work on other programmes or develop other ideas. And you can't make a show if you don't have a production team. But that doesn't mean the show's dead. And I've seen a lot of this whinging of people going, well, they've just killed it off, but they don't want to say it because the BBC, because they're so woke. They're so woke, the BBC, they hate cars. And first of all, anyone who uses the word woke as a negative is a prick. This is just a fact. But also...
But another
fact is, it's the BBC's property. They can do as they damn well like. They could say they're pausing it and then not make it again for 100 years. And that's still true. They don't have to say either way whether they've killed it off or not, because it's not a dog. It's a television format. It can lay dormant for as long as they want. And then they could re-energise it whenever they want. Well, that's how it works. It's a fucking format.
What, they're cryogenically frozen it, possibly?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it's a name and it's a format. And even the format doesn't have to be the same. They could bring back Top Gear and it turns out that it's, you know, like Dancing on Ice, but with cars. And no one could stop them because it's their name and they can do as they like with it. And this is what's annoyed me about the thing where people... I heard Perry McCarthy, the ex-Stig, on the radio the day it was announced. And I was just like, I wanted to ring him up and go, Perry, shut up. Whinging on about how the BBC have cancelled the show and that it's a mistake. They were caught in this terrible bind where, you know, it is a matter of record that Freddie had what was a pretty terrible accident. And the specifics haven't got out, but it sounds awful. And the ball was in his court, rightly so. Until he came out and said what happened and what it had done to him physically and mentally, the BBC couldn't make a move, because if they brought the show back without him and then he went, oh, by the way, I was really banged up, and then Top Gear just drove off without me effectively, they'd look terrible. But if they decide to wait until he's committed to coming back or not, well, again, it's up to him. And I guess maybe, I don't know this, maybe he hasn't said... or maybe he has said, but now they just have to wait it out a bit. Again, the thing at the BBC, and I say this as someone who worked for them on and off.
Oh, did you?
I might have mentioned it once or twice.
No.
But yeah, what did I do? Like 15 years, I reckon I did with the Beeb in total. And one of the things that you'll notice about the BBC is that it is quite neurotic sometimes about how it's perceived in the wider world, because it gets so much flack, particularly at the moment, on a pretty much a day-to-day basis, particularly from dullards. Kind of dullards who use the word woke as a criticism on the internet. They're always bitching about the BBC. And so the Beeb is absolutely neurotic about this, I think, sometimes. And they don't want to look bad. They don't want a Daily Mail front page accusing them of being insensitive. And so they're naturally going to err on the side of caution when someone who was working for them at the time gets really hurt in an accident.
Yep.
And this is why, you know, it's no surprise the show is now officially on a hiatus that may be indefinite, we don't know, because what else can they do? But I don't know that it's... people go, oh, it's being cancelled. Well, it hasn't. It could come back, but it might come back in 2075 when we're all dead. You just don't know.
So, did you ever refer to it as TG?
I suppose I have done, yeah.
Yeah, that's okay, is it? It's not like saying hubby instead of husband or anything, really.
Oh, God, no. It's okay. Not that. I mean, nothing's that bad.
Okay.
But,
or hollybobs. We won't go near hollybobs.
I was going to say, there's only a couple of things worse than hubby, and one of them is hollybobs.
I mean, oh gosh, yeah. Please, it's just awful. It's just, I can't bear it. I'd rather announce to everybody for one day of the year, everybody you come into contact with, just call them a C to their face. I think that's less offensive than using the term hollybobs. Go in, put your car in to have some new tyres in. Morning, you bunch of Cs. Right, I'd like the new set of tyres on, thanks. Do you want me to pay? Yeah, no problem, C. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, let me do it. I'll just put my pin in.
Yeah. I think anyone who says hollybobs, you should be allowed to just cuff them around the head like in Laurel and Hardy films. Just a cuff. You're not hitting them. You're just cuffing them just to get stop it.
Do you know what? Not even violent. You just simply take their holiday away. No, no, it's just instantly gets cancelled. So they don't know their holiday's cancelled until they go to the airport and there's no recollection of any booking. There's no... Yeah. They can't go.
Well, actually, it does say on the file here that you did use the word hollybobs a couple of weeks ago, so that's why. No, go home and shut up.
Yeah.
That's also, if you say the word hubby, that they instantly get imprisoned. I'm afraid you referred to your husband as hubby, and now he's in Pentonville for 9 years. So that'll teach you.
That'll learn you.
Keep saying it. We'll extend his sentence. He's not getting out for good behaviour. He's done nothing wrong. This is your fault.
Say it again, another year. Say it again, another year. Exactly. It's really easy, this.
Turning over the gates. Hi, I'm here to see my hubby. Oh, unlucky. You're not seeing him and he's in for another 12 years.
This is not car related, but is wifey as awful and crap?
It's pretty bad.
It is, isn't it?
I hate dated euphemisms for wife. Her indoors, the missus. Just say your wife.
Yeah.
It's just like, what's wrong with that word? It's not like you're writing a lengthy article where you're trying to think of synonyms for the same word.
No.
You're just being a prick about something that you could perfectly well say in a straightforward manner. Sorry, I'm off on my hind legs this morning. I love really it. What's That's going
a,
on.
I love it when you're on your hind legs. It's great fun.
I'll stop there. But anyway, just to wrap up this Top Gear thing, I don't know. I mean, I think the BBC was in a very difficult situation, and so they've done the only thing they can do, which is to go, look, we're not going to make any Top Gear for the foreseeable future, but that doesn't mean we will never make it again. And they probably haven't fully communicated that and allowed a gap into which various gobshites and idiots have started yabbering. But I think the fact is there's nothing else they could do. In the same way that when people go, well, they sacked Jeremy because they hated him because he wasn't politically correct. Like, they didn't sack him. They didn't renew his contract because he'd been a dick.
Mm.
And that's an entirely different thing. If he had been in their employment, they could have suspended him, but he was about to come to the end of a contract. They couldn't give him a multi-million pound deal when he just hit one of his colleagues. Yep. So he was let go. He wasn't sacked. That's not how freelancing works.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up. And of course... I think what the BBC needs is just another very loose car-based show, wearing very loose clothing, I would say. Perhaps.
Caftan cars.
I would say,
I've shut the hem in the door of the new Honda HR-V.
So I shut the door on my NBA suit and walk off and basically derobe myself instantly because it's wafer thin silk.
Wafer. Linen driving with Johnny Smith.
I think it would be great
for your channel.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that's quite interesting because there is now no car show on what you might still call mainstream TV.
No, there isn't. Which is
because it's Fifth quite, Gear's resting.
Yeah, Fifth Gear's resting. I don't know if that'll come back. It won't come back with me, but who knows? It does.
Top Gear obviously resting. I mean, this Wheel of Deal is obviously in all those other shows on sort of cable and satellite channels. Not to undo the work they do, because Wheel of Dealers is globally huge, isn't it?
And it is. It's massive.
It doesn't really get the credit it deserves for that, but there isn't on the kind of telly you can get for nowt, essentially, like on, you know, any television in the UK, channels 1 to 5, there's no car show.
No.
And I mean, again, people go, oh, well, it just shows people don't like cars anymore. And it's like, it is interesting that I think almost it's not just that. I think TV commissioners are a little concerned that the car isn't fashionable anymore.
Well,
unlike,
or
property or cooking or dancing, which, don't have such a bad rep. The car, people can go, why are you glorifying something when it's damaging the environment?
Yeah.
Where actually, it feels like, because people are aware that they're going to sort of, that they're going to have to buy an electric car at some point in the future, once internal combustion is no longer available to buy new, feels like there is a gap for a more trad car show that just sort of tells you what's going on a bit more. But I suppose that is covered by people online, isn't it?
That's covered
by the thing. You've got
content creators like on YouTube,
yeah.
like for example, there's a guy I know called Johnny Smith. It's very, very good, almost effortlessly.
Oh,
he's talented.
Good. I like him. Yeah, I like him.
He's
good.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not. I watched him once. I thought he was going to be a prick, but he wasn't.
It's all right. Yeah.
To be fair. TBF, yeah. You know what I mean? He looked like one of them, and I thought, he's going to be one of them. He looked like one, and I thought, he is going to be. You wait. He'll open his mouth, and I'll be like, you little, dirty little. But he's not one of them. He's not. He's all right.
So, yeah, I suppose there's less... I suppose that's the thing. Television is now sort of filling the gaps that YouTube can't provide. So, you know, there's no YouTuber could make Strictly Come Dancing. That is the kind of program that could only exist on trad television, I think. I mean, it could be broadcast on YouTube, but it had to be made by a bigger organisation.
But should the car TV come back with the production values of Attenborough's Planet Earth?
Mm.
Do some really, really glossy, gorgeous, big picture stuff that there would never be a budget allocated for off of YouTube and all that.
Yeah,
and then it's coffee table material, so it's dateless. It's not necessarily reviewing the latest thing, which will become old hat quite soon. It goes the other way. I could see that working really well. I mean, Chris Harris kind of does that. Or when he started his own channel, him and Neil Carey, you know, they filmed very cinematically, all that kind of stuff, and did a fine job of it. It goes back to when, actually, to hook Top Gear back in again, when Clarkson finally learnt to drive. I know we've talked about this a few times in the past. I don't know if we've talked about it publicly. I think we've just talked about it you and I together. But there was that moment when, in old Top Gear, Jeremy wasn't a massively accomplished performance driver, by his own admission, probably, and then just sort of went away and learnt how to do it, and then came back and could skid.
He used to drag Tiff over to a corner of an airfield where they were filming together and make him teach him. It was one of the reasons.
Brilliant.
The reason that Jeremy is really good at sliding cars on camera now is because he got Tiff to teach him.
It's because the Sultan of Slide
exactly,
was mentored
yes.
him. Didn't he?
The Sultan of Slide,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, he is, though. I mean, another reason for us all to bow down and respect the almost translucent leather-jacketed Tiff Nadell.
Yeah, yeah. No, his influence goes deeper than you think. So I'm reading Chris Harris's book at the moment, and he has a little dig at the driving talents of the previous Top Gear presenters, which I thought was a little unfair, because Jeremy is quite handy in a TV sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he'd set a blistering lap time around the Nürburgring, although he's had a go in that film we did with the diesel Jag. But as someone who can showboat for television cameras,
yeah,
he's good. I mean, I've been in a car with him on a track and on an airfield, and I totally trust him to absolutely hang it out, but more importantly, to get it back again without going onto the grass.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I've seen Richard do some very impressive driving as well. When we were in Bolivia, and we were coming down this terrifying mountain pass in the pitch black in a Land Cruiser with no brakes.
What?
And we'd be dead without Richard's amazing... He's really good on loose stuff, Hammond. He's better on loose stuff than he is on a track. He's like, he should have been a rally driver rather than a track driver. His car control and his ability to anticipate and scrub off momentum by basically sliding the car was quite remarkable, particularly considering we were all knackered as well. Some of the best driving I've seen, the truth be told, because without it we'd have gone over the edge.
Wow, shit, that would have made some headlines, wouldn't it?
He's not an absolute oaf in the car.
And James
is, I mean, he's a perfectly competent driver. I don't think he's not that interested in hanging out the tail. He can, I've seen him do it, but it's like, it's almost, he does it reluctantly. Oh, if I must.
We've all hung our tails out reluctantly. It's just the nature of the beast.
Anyway, but I don't know. I saw May last week saying, you know, I think if anything, the format's due for a reinvention, and I kind of agree with him. But
of course,
at the same time,
it's been 20 odd years of it being.
Well,
the
it
way
has, and I do see stuff on YouTube and on other shows where it's sort of three men going on adventures together and mucking about and taking the piss out of each other, and I sort of sometimes go, I feel like I'm having my own leftovers reheated and served back to me here, and maybe it is time to move on. But as May himself said, and I also agree with this, don't know what the answer is there. I mean, I've got some thoughts, but I'm just not sure that, I don't know, that commissioners, that they are sometimes tendency to go, well, that worked, so let's do more of it.
Well, that was how I was going to sign this off, almost, is say that I get asked lots why I don't pitch TV ideas or you know, do any TV shows at all. And the reality is the success rate of a TV show is so low, you have to relentlessly pitch stuff and refine stuff and possibly do FOC pilots and stuff. And that would take up all your time. And that means your earnings are an unknown. So, and commissioners are very risk averse, I would say, these days, a lot of the time. And any car show which gets pitched immediately gets pitted against Top Gear, and then they'll go, do we want it to emulate that, or do we want to do the opposite? Do we want to run away into the horizon? Very different.
Yeah, it's tricky.
I think Top Gear should just come back as 70s Top Gear, because Angela Rippon has just been thrown out of, not thrown out, makes it sound like she's a disgraced sort of, she's been spitting and swearing at people, but been thrown out of Strictly Come Dancing. And Rippon was a good presenter in a car. Noel Edmonds isn't dead. And
No.
We know that Goffey's not dead. We know Woolard's not dead. I don't know about Tony Mason, actually. I've just said his name, and I don't. Yeah, I don't.
Mason's there. And then, of course, you know, Quentin's around. Tiff. Quentin,
yeah.
Yes, just do.
Can we not just do like a really lo-fi but beautiful old school, this is a new car, this is how it works, and we're now going to go over to the new motor show with Quentin Wilson. Yeah. With a corded microphone.
They did, I gather they shot something with Goffey and Rippon for the next series of Top Gear, which is obviously now on the shelf, but they did do some kind of retro thing. Angela Rippon was once slightly narky to my wife when she, her first job at the BBC, because my wife hadn't lived in the UK for very long, and was working at the Beeb at Television Centre, and offices there, you know, productions use an office, and then when they come to an end, the office gets vacated, someone else moves in. So quite often, your phone number was, until the week before, somebody else's phone number, and so you get calls for them still. And this well-spoken lady rang my wife's desk phone one day and went, I'd like to speak to Sarah. And my wife said, oh, there's no Sarah here. Well, this is her number, I'd like to speak to Sarah. No, there is no Sarah in this office. It's Angela Rippon. And my wife grew up in the US, has no idea who that is.
Oh, gosh.
And so she just went, okay. And Angela Rippon went, do you know who I am? And my wife had to go, no, I'm sorry, I don't.
She did the deal.
Angela Rippon was a bit, yeah, she did. Don't you know who I am, I think it was. And my wife went, I'm sorry, I don't. And Angela Rippon was a bit cross about this.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, I suppose if you've been famous for years and years, maybe your brain can't quite comprehend that someone hasn't heard of you.
I do that all the time. Do all the time, Richard.
What? In what sense?
What you just said, that rip and speck, like disbelief of not knowing who I am. Do you know who I am? No, I've actually never said, do you know who I am? Because A, I'm not famous enough, and B, I think it will always end in tragedy. I just think it would always end in terrible. Embarrassment or tragedy.
No, it's a terrible thing to say. I can't understand how anyone would say it. It doesn't matter, even if you were, I don't know, Brad Pitt or Bono or something, which you just wouldn't say it, surely.
No.
Because it's fraught with peril.
It is, isn't it?
If there's the danger that someone will go, I'm sorry, I really don't. But I'm amazed you do know who you are, though, because you've had... you've had very little sleep in the past, week or so because of...
Certainly in the last...
Your thirst for high-energy music.
Last 4 days has been challenging for my near 45-year-old frame. But it's been good fun. It's been really good fun. It's been lovely, lovely fun.
This is almost like you're just trying to live... one of this podcast's memes for real. You went to a drum and bass night in Bristol.
Yes, I did. It was pleasantly pre-internet. Yes, it was brilliant. Yeah, it was great. It was just a tick box of things I knew I was going to see when I went in. For a start, held out of town in a very, very ropey warehouse. Though those that know of Motion will know what I'm talking about. I think it was an old marble cutting warehouse or something to do with marble.
Hmm.
Or might have even been actual, you know, like making marbles. I don't bloody know. What I do know is that if the lights ever did go up, I think you'd be horrified. So, but yeah, it's very industrial. It dawned on me. I drove down there to rendezvous with my mates. We had a civilized dinner and stuff. And we were like, yeah. I just went, oh yeah. Well, so what time does it start? It was LTJ Bookham and Ronnie Size, so if you know your 90s drum and bass, you'll appreciate. Mm. But we looked at the thing and it was like, yeah, it starts at midnight. Okay, so we don't need to be in there before midnight. Okay. Well, I've had a really long day already, a long week, and I've just driven 4 hours to get there. Okay, all right, I can do this. And yeah, it was midnight till four. And, Pretty Joe is fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was brilliant. And the bass was phenomenal. The drums were good as well. But,
compressed your lungs.
Yeah, it was excellent. I started talking to an old college friend of mine who I didn't know was going to be there. I met him next to the bar. So in the midst of this very dirty D&B session, we were talking about his Astra GTE and his GMC Cyclone, which I thought was really funny. He was talking about meth injection on it, and I was going, yeah, meth injection, but it was so loud, I was sort of hearing one in four words.
I was going to say, isn't it? It's like a really lovely place for an unexpected catch-up with an old friend is a D&B night after midnight. How are the kids? What?
Do you know what I also noticed? Because Ronnie Size was doing some... they obviously use these days the sort of electric decks. I think they're pioneers, a lot of them favour. So they've got two platters, but they're not playing actual vinyl, are they? But when they're twiddling the little the mixer controls and they're really doing it enthusiastically, where they're sort of like tweaking and then their hand leaves it viciously and then they look up at the crowd.
Yes.
I said to my mate, it's like they're playing high energy chess with themselves, because it looks like a chess game. And they go, yeah.
It's the very ostentatious removal of the hand from the thing, isn't it? Where you have to like really, you fling your hand into the air a little bit.
Exactly. It's a bit like Salt Bay, but much less twatty.
Yeah.
It looks like they're having a really high energy, or they've taken a bag full of cocaine and then they've played chess with themselves. Yeah, I can imagine. You can only imagine how that would look. Yeah, check, mate. Yeah, whatever, mate. Yeah. That was really good fun. Ended up walking back, which is always soulful at 4:30 in the morning. And also, you have the conundrum of like, it was quite good actually. My we're all No, all bar one of them were dads. One of my mates, who's been to see loads of drum and bass, he came up to us and he held out my hand and he put something in it. And it was almost like he was giving all of us drugs. And I was like, what are you doing? And then I opened up my hand. There were earplugs. And he went, just to be on the safe side. And he went, and
that's such a brilliantly middle-aged thing.
It was a real dad moment. And then I went, then when we were in there, I went, oh, we've all got our coats on. Shall I go and put our coats in? Because like, it's going to get hot in here and hectic. Mm. And one of my mates, Dan, was like, no, I never put my coat in. I don't trust them. So he wore his puffer jacket all night. And then my other mate had just tied everything around his waist, like loads of layers. Because, again, being practical middle-aged dads, you're like, well, when we leave, it's going to be cold and rainy and we've got a 25-minute walk. I'm not like turning up with no coat on. That's just a shit move.
No.
So it's that whole decision making. And then, of course, when we went outside afterwards, all of the taxis / not really a taxi, just a guy driving around Bristol at night offering lifts. There was a lot of that going on, which was really good. Mm. We didn't partake with that. But yeah, the session was really good, I have to say. Very creative. Talking of creative, actually, the Prodigy gig that I went to last night, I must say to listeners, if I sound like I've been up all night, it's because I've been up all night. And
then you literally drove all night.
I did.
What Robertson said.
And crept in my room.
It's your own room.
And I was hoping to make love to me, but I was just simply too tired. So
too tired. Yeah. can we rain check on the love making? I'm absolutely exhausted.
I set my alarm and went, right, if I fall asleep now, I'm going to get 3¾ hours sleep. Okay, let's do this.
Oh God.
But yeah. The Prodigy were amazing. I won't dwell on it because this is a car podcast. But yeah, needless to say, they say don't meet your heroes. I've wanted to see the Prodigy since forever. I bought their first album in 1991, had a profound effect on me, and I wish I'd seen them sooner. But yeah, really, in that creative way, they seem to marry metal with dance music, and I think they were one of the earliest kind of bands to do that. They meld them so well together. So the mix of people at the gig was weird. When you go to a rave, ravers are quite they're quite considerate to one another. Nobody like barges into anybody. Everyone's just making shapes and gurning. So that's okay. Metal, obviously, things like mosh pits appear and there's lots of...
Oh, it's a contact sport, isn't it?
Yeah, metal, there's throwing and punching and like chucking of drinks. Well, we got caught in a mosh pit at the Prodigy gig.
Oh.
Yeah, I had to give someone a telling off.
Yeah. You pulled one of your earplugs out and went, now look here.
Yeah, yeah. I got pushed so violently from behind, it was like having a mild car accident.
Oh shit. I hate when that happens.
That's not the
downside of a sort of an up-tempo gig, isn't it?
Possibility
of shoving.
Yeah.
Liam Howlett. Well, let's do the thing about Liam Howlett. I was fascinated. I presume he's moved on, but he used to make a lot of Prodigy records using an old Amiga.
Yeah, no, he hasn't moved on. He's still the pillar of the community. He was holding it all together last night.
But is he still using a very old computer now to sequences? I presume live, they're not. They're running it off.
Do you know what? They were doing
some other there was some, software.
Lots of mixology going on. I don't know if... I'm pretty sure they would have used more modern technology, judging by what they were doing. Yeah. But they had a drummer and a guitarist for every track, and it worked. Huh. And they were mashing together really early tracks with new ones, and the best. I'm going to say Stellantis are going to be so peed off when they watch this this tour, because Prodigy have clearly stolen all the lasers. There are no more other lasers out there. I don't think they couldn't have used more lasers if they tried. There's none.
Bad news for our live show on the 7th, because the Prodigy have got all of Britain's lasers.
They have. We'll have to go to a market stall and get a load of those pointer pens, laser pointers. sellotape them all together.
The other thing about Liam Howlett is he's a total car guy, isn't he?
Mm. I'd love to meet him and interview him. He runs a motorcycle race team.
Have you tried reaching out to him?
I tried going through somebody that kind of knows him through the motorcycle world, but with no successes yet. I think the TVR connection was always the thing that I loved about him. And
he ordered a Cerberus Speed 12. Yeah. Him and Keith Flynn ordered them when they were announced. And then when it became clear that the road car wasn't really going to happen, they got their deposits back. But yeah, they were two of the first people to order a Speed 12. Yeah. And they both had, I forget now, I was reading up on this because I wrote an article about the Cerberus Speed 12 for Evo the other month. And they were quite, not just enthusiastic TVR owners, but I think sort of quite active in the TVR community. Like, I know Liam Howlett was on Pistonhead's forum for a while.
Was he?
Just chatting about stuff with, and then kind of outed himself and then had to prove his identity. And, from what I gather, it was genuinely him.
Well, he looks just
so
the same.
So he's probably
as he
watched your
has.
Stuff on your channel, because if he's that kind of guy who just likes to nerd out about cars on the internet, he's bound to have settled down with your review.
Do
of
Do you think so? With the Commodore Amiga on his lap and a cup of cocoa.
With the Amiga still writing songs on an Amiga.
I have to say, they're still just as creative as ever, and bravo. It was a great gig. It's a great gig, mate, and I can highly recommend it for friends and family. Yeah,
I was talking of staying up late. Sorry to interrupt you.
I know the thing that all through the gig, because it was really like quite bouncy and a little bit fighty in places, and the warm up act, one of the warm up acts was particularly sort of like angry. I checked every couple of minutes my zippable pocket to just make sure my car key hadn't fallen out or been taken.
Oh, God.
Because I thought, if the shit goes down, I've got to get back to the multi-story car park and drive 3.5 hours. And if I lose that on the dance floor, because the lights went up and there was just a sea of single-use plastic cups, which is just a shame, and the odd lighter and vapey thing. I was worried if I lose the key, I'm doomed. Absolutely doomed.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, carry as you were, Richard.
Talking of staying up late, I went to... Well, the night that you were at the D&B night in Bristol, I was having a pretty much an equivalent experience at our kids' school quiz for the PTA in the local church hall.
Oh! Was Ronnie Size playing?
He was. Couldn't hear any of the questions because there was so much skittery beat over the top of it. That was quite good. That wasn't a late one, but it was an unexpectedly boozy one, to the extent that my wife had to tell me to calm down at one point because I was saying all the answers far too loudly.
Oh, really?
And the table of teachers behind us was rolling their eyes a little bit and tutting.
Were you drunk shouting?
Well, because it's a PTA quiz in a church hall. I didn't really know what to expect. We'd not been to one before. And they just had a decorator's table of booze that was for sale. And so...
Well, the table was for sale.
No, well, that's the thing. They went, this table, you'll be able to set the table once you got rid of all this booze. All right, then, I'll give it a go. The damage was really that my friend Gareth, who's one of the other dads on the team, won a bottle of Drambuie in the half-time break.
Oh, gosh.
And we decided to open it during the second half, and it all got a bit giddy. And then I thought, discreetly, as you do in sort of pub quiz environments, sort of, across the table to whoever was writing the answers that time, go, "It's Concord!" But my wife pointed out I was actually saying it quite loudly.
Oh, gosh.
And also we were just generally mucking about a bit.
Oh, no.
They were circulating fucking vodka jelly shots.
Vodka jelly at the church hall PTA quiz?
I know,
quiz.
It's a PTA quiz in a church hall. And, one of the mums on our team came back with a load of vodka jelly shots and went, "Oh, I've got these in." I'm like, "Is this wise?" Oh, go on then. All right, so...
I can't remember the last time I had a vodka. It's a bit sort of pre-internet house
really
party,
thing,
isn't it?
It's exactly that. Yeah. I was like, "What? I don't understand." But anyway, this is fine. So, yeah,
Bristol, it's
middle-aged people speaking too loudly.
It's part of the curriculum in Bristol.
Yes. But the following night, I went to a school reunion and ended up staying up late, and it sort of broke me for about 4 days afterwards. It's just, I can't do that anymore. Yeah, well, that's it. You're now in it. This is going to take you a few days to bounce back from, surely.
I'm going to go to the West End to watch... musical soon. I can't wait.
Which one?
Is Ulez Miserable?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's really going to be quite emotional, I think.
Is it just going to be lots of gammony people whinging about Sadiq Khan?
Yeah, that's right. But with also synchronised dancing and...
Okay, yeah. Obviously synchronised dancing.
Yeah. There'll be some waving of tax discs and tailpipes and things as well.
Yeah. And there's a whole sort of one of those slower numbers, just a solo, about someone who's too thick to understand how the ULEZ is based on particulate emissions, not CO2.
Yeah, that's...
Still hasn't got their head around it.
That's right. It'll be the single spotlight on the person.
Yeah.
The woe is me.
I'm so confused. No, you're just stupid.
You should be in it. They'd be auditioning soon for the old ULEZ Miserables. Yeah, you'd love that, wouldn't you? I do love her. Do
it's
love
driven
a musical.
Me out of my car. You can get a Yaris for 300 quid that's compliant. Now shut up.
But I think the sad part of the story is always lots of immaculate, one-owner, rare but nobody cares cars that are just being outlawed.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
One by one, orphaned.
Is that the case though? Because I mean, the cutoff for petrol is almost 20 years ago.
Yes.
How many of those cars are still being? I mean, the thing about London
old
is
money,
you do see some funny old stuff hanging around, don't you? It's just things that I think old money and also probably low use. Cars.
That's the thing. Mileage young. I like to use the term mileage young.
Mileage young?
Yes. Because, you know, in avionics and a heavy plant, they don't talk about the age of the machine. They talk about the hours, don't they? That it's worked. That's all they care about. So I think there's a lot of mileage young kind of city cars. Still got lots of life left. Often one owner. Or old money spec, as we've discussed previously. Mm. Old money, mileage young spec is kind of how you want it.
The Bristol Fighter had a gauge that recorded hours.
Did it?
I mean, obviously, it still had a mileometer because it has to, but it had in the ceiling, I think, it had an hours thing. I mean, it was a gimmick, obviously, but it was, they used, it's aviation thinking.
Mm. Always reminds me of Jason Plato, that car, because I don't even think he's ever driven it, but his one of his favourite little slogans was always, "Ooh, you fighter," when he was... when he's, like, got a car a bit squiffy or it's tried to bite him. So I always wanted him to drive the Bristol Fighter, and he would just be constantly having... just muttering the same thing over and over again. It's like, you're absolutely right, Jason. It is the fighter. You're saying, "Ooh, you fighter." It is. That's what it is. Maybe it's not too late. Maybe we should get Jason in a fighter. Ooh, you fighter.
Yeah.
I think that would be great.
Yeah. How many did they make? 9, I think?
So yes, 9. So
slim pickings, but they are out there.
Yeah, you fighter.
I have driven a fighter, funnily enough, not in a way that caused me to go, "Ooh, you fighter," because I had the man who owned the company next to me for most of it. But
oh, gosh.
But it was, I mean, I liked it. It was interesting. It's there's something quite endearing about it.
I'd like Plato to do it. Do you know what? I woke up the other morning and I felt with the news of Top Gear maybe disappearing forever, but also maybe just being cryogenically frozen for a while. Mm. I feel very lucky to have worked on car TV. with some of the people that I've worked with.
Mm.
Working with Vicky and Tiff, done some work with Quentin. Just worked with the some of the proper legends. And you've worked with all of them and then some.
No, I had exactly the same thought. I thought, I suddenly have counted my blessings that I got to do old Top Gear for a little bit, but then the new era of Top Gear from 2002, when talking as we were about how maybe, you know, maybe it's time for a reinvention, but then it's hard to know how you reinvent, and the shadow that that format and that show generally casts over car TV.
Mm.
I was going to say it's maybe one of the reasons why commissioners are reticent to commission new car TV, because they kind of go, oh, well, everyone will just compare it to that and it'll be annoying. But the time when we got to do that, and we were just making it up as we went along, but it, some, if not all of it, worked and evolved into the show that it was. And I do feel very lucky to have been able to do that and not had the sense that people were looking over our shoulder too much.
Yeah.
They're allowing us to make mistakes. And I don't think that would happen now so much because there's too much riding on it. I think I just caught the tail end of an era when television was a little bit more prepared to take risks. Certainly the BBC.
Totally.
We're like, we have this remit to not just chase ratings. We're trying to make programmes for everybody as part of our public service brief. And so we're going to allow this to just sort of naturally evolve and fulfil its role as a sort of slightly boisterous Sunday night entertainment. And I just think that if from scratch that wouldn't necessarily happen now, but for lots and lots of reasons, which I won't go into now. So, yeah, it's good. Do you know what else I was thinking the other day? I was thinking how lucky I was, and I suppose we were, to catch the tail end of the heyday of the motor show.
Absolutely.
Because I suddenly remembered, I don't know why it's popped into my head, I just suddenly had an image of being like at the Geneva Motor Show and thinking, it just doesn't happen anymore, certainly not the way that it used to. And I used to quite like that sort of spend a day wandering around, sitting in some cars and things, because, you know, 10-year-old me that used to go to the British Motor Show at the Birmingham NEC and fight through crowds just to have the chance to sit in a Micra, my little mind would have been blown at the idea that as an adult I was able to go to press day. And I just thought, what a lucky bastard you were. I never thought that would happen. So it's quite nice that it did. I count my blessings there as well, because motor shows are really not a thing anymore, are they?
They're one of my favourite things I always enjoyed doing roving reports on for TV, because it was a bit of a kind of like blind panic scrum. You had a rough idea of who you needed to cover and what you needed to try and get a glimpse of, but it was a bit Wild West, and I sort of enjoyed that, as long as you had access to coffee and somewhere to put your coat and your bag. I know that sounds really practical, but no, it gets boring carrying a heavy bag all day. You can't quite concentrate. So
you always got to find somewhere to put it. We sort of had that at Goodwood, didn't we? We've done those roving things at Festival of Speed where you've got a bag and a coat, and then you end up sort of having to just tuck it behind something else while you do a piece to camera, or give it to a member of the crew, and then they sort of look like a pack mule.
They look like a pack mule.
Standing there with everybody's stuff on.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. My first motor show in a like working capacity was at the Birmingham NEC in 98. And that was a busy old show, you know, Rover 75, Jaguar S-Type, lots of new stuff there. And we were filming for Top Gear and the BBC One motor show special that used to go out on a Sunday evening, the week of the motor show. And during that filming, that scrum, I remember memorably, the crew that I was with, the director, was quite stressed about getting everything done. And he narkily was shooing people out of the way. And in the course of the day, he managed to narkily shoo Steve Coogan and Ian McShane out of the way while we were trying to get shots.
Ian McShane.
Coogan was wearing like a cagoule. Yeah, Ian McShane. And then we were looking. That's the first time I noticed that Ian McShane's got a very long back and short legs.
He's got a... Did you say a long back?
Well, he was wearing, you know, it seems to be an enthusiast of the scrap metal dealer leather jacket.
Yeah,
and
true.
So it might have been, it was distorted by the jacket, but it definitely looked like he had quite a long back and short legs. And Our director kind of went, excuse me, we're trying to get shot here. And this guy went, oh, sorry, and walked away. And then we went, mate, that was Lovejoy. You just told Lovejoy to piss
Incredible.
Off.
Incredible. Or for, as we've said before, or for listeners who aren't as old as us, Winston from John Wick.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. If I'd been able to travel forward through time, I'd have come back and gone, yeah.
But we all know him as Lovejoy with the dodgy Datsun van. Datsun pickup
yes.
truck.
Oh, there was something else I wanted to talk about.
Well, I was going to say, there's something I wrote. First of all, I just want to get something out of the way, which is thank you to everybody who sent us that advert for that terribly vandalised white Jaguar S-Type. The one that has a quite extraordinary bit of, I suppose you'd call it artwork on the bonnet.
I suppose you'd call it artwork.
Well, I mean, it is. You know, someone's put it. It's also got a massive spoiler on the back, and it's got, for no apparent reason, it's got the rear quarter windows on the back doors.
Yeah,
the rearmost bit of glass, the little bit, has been body coloured in. I can't work out why that would be, but I think it's supposed to be based, the whole graphic theme of the outside is based on Stephen King's It, appropriately enough.
What?
So it sort of ties back to what we were saying last week
with Mambo Number 5.
No. Yes, and the stereo is jammed on Mambo Number 5.
I still can't believe Stephen King listening to that. It just really tickles me. Oh gosh.
But yes, thank you to everyone who sent us this extraordinarily for the Jag Vandalism News Desk, this extraordinarily decorated S-Type. It really is quite a thing to behold, where they've adapted the grill on that car to look like a mouth by painting it red. It's horrible.
Oh gosh. Jag Vandalism continues.
Jag Vandalism. I mean, it's also, I think, I can't find the price now. I've been sent this so many times. But thank you to everybody who sent it to us. Look, I found here someone sent us the actual original ad.
What? It was for sale?
It was for sale, but now I can't access it.
But no one was going to buy it, surely.
Well, this is what I was wondering. It's like, who would look at that and go, yep. Yeah, that's it. That's the one for me. You know, I find other cars boring. It's just like, it's so personal taste. It is so to somebody's personal taste that it's just the chances of you finding somebody else who's gone, I don't really like cars, but I'd love a Jaguar S-Type that's been painted up with a Stephen King-themed exterior
Awful.
Paint job and a massive rear wing.
Awful. I like custom cars, but they are extremely personal and reselling them is the hardest.
Did you see that message, by the way, from a chap called Chris Muse, who spotted a G-Wagen that had been rebadged as a Jimny XL?
Oh, no. Mm. That's a great idea.
He spotted it in northern France, but it was on German plates. But, yeah, it's just got, he sent us a little picture, just on the rear quarter, it's got Jimny XL as a badge, which I kind of like.
That's good taste.
Do you always see that? You see people in G63s, and I always just think, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. I'm sick
and
of
I
them.
Say, you know, and I say that, I've got a frigging supercharged Range Rover. It's hardly the most sensible or normal car, but there's something about G63s, brand new ones, where I just go, go and see a therapist.
Yeah, we've said it before. I think I'm over them, really. I think as soon as they introduced fake roof gutters, my eyebrow was already raised. But
well, yes. See, this is my beef with that car, is that Mercedes could do better.
Mm.
They know how to make a more efficient, more aerodynamic car with no rain gutters and doors that don't need an almighty slam. So they've sort of deliberately made that car worse. You know, it was compared to, I don't know, like an old Land Rover Defender. Land Rover could not afford or be asked to do any better. Whereas Mercedes went, so when they reinvented the Defender, they did just make it a modern car with all of the sort of features of a modern car as they could be. And when Mercedes reinvented the G-Wagon, they just made it the same.
Yeah.
And that's very un-Mercedes to me. That's like, I don't understand it.
Although, in a world where all of their models look like melted versions of what they originally set out to be, there's no Mercedes right now that's good looking. I really don't think.
I was following the new C-Class, which, to be perfectly honest, I'd sort of forgotten there was a new C-Class. And I was following one on the motorway the other day, and I went, oh, bugger me. And it's not an unpleasant-looking car, but I know what you mean.
They're all too...
Do you think the heat's on too high in their design studio?
Yeah.
And all the clay models are slowly just melting overnight and no one's spotted it?
Yeah, it's like those Easter bunnies. What are they called? Those chocolate Easter bunnies that are wrapped in...
Are they lint?
Yeah, a lint bunny. Like a lint them? Bunny that's yeah. been near a radiator for a day and everything's just dropped a little. The ear's just a little lower than you're expecting yeah. it to be. And the nose is drooping a little bit more. And you go, I feel like that's what all current Merc models are like. I was hoping to like this, but I just don't. And I actually had a message from a viewer of the Late Break Show the other day going, I've got the chance to get a really killer lease deal on an electric Mercedes. It's either an EQA or a blah, blah, blah. And they went, what do you reckon? I just said, none of them are worth buying. I said, no electric Mercedes is class leading in any respect. Then there's all that most of their competitors, I would say, that I've driven are better than them. In the same way that there's only one good electric Audi.
Mm.
EQS, if it had brakes, it would probably be pretty good. And yeah, so like those two big German name manufacturers, their EV stuff is just like, meh, meh, meh. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I just remembered what I was supposed to say. Hang on. It was... you were talking about Land Rovers and Defenders.
Yeah.
New Defender, right? It's not that new anymore. I know it's probably 2 years old or something. You know those saddlebags that go on the side windows at the back?
Oh, yes, the sort of storage locker things. Yeah,
Which I see a lot of cars which have had that option ticked.
Mm.
I want to know what owners really put in there. So just
what do they put
what
in
do
there?
The, does anybody put anything in there? Like, really? Is it like, I don't know, you know when you're putting... When you had really young babies and you had to change a nappy, and instead of putting the nappy in the bin in the house, you just immediately walked outside and went, no, this is straight to the bin outside. It's just not staying in the house. It can't stay in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
If there's a situation like that for, you know, like you pick up your kids from school and one of them's done something horrible in their sports shorts, it goes in the side lock and not in the car.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Is it? It's just, soiled underwear lockers is what you're saying.
Well, because I remember when they launched the car, they were talking about the fact that it has, I think they have a drain hole in one of them or both of them.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, I think they were for wetsuits and I think they claimed it's for outdoor pursuit stuff. So I don't know if you're climbing.
Well, I could see that. Again, go away. And it's like, I think if I've been away for a bit and my walking boots absolutely stink and they're not very nice in the boot of the car, so I suppose you could lock. Are they big enough to lock a pair of walking boots in?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I would say they are. You could probably get...
I don't know. Is it one of those things where you'd order it and you go, oh, yeah, well, it's really outdoorsy and rugged, and then you'd find you never use them? Or is it, in fact, one of those things where you find them incredibly useful and couldn't live without them? I don't know. If you've got a Defender with those side panel compartments on...
Can someone
drop
tell
us
me
a
what
line,
you do?
hello@smithandsniff.com.
Yeah, I want to know. I'm keen to know whether anybody actually uses them. Or maybe people are just running County Line's drug late-night drug runs, and the side panels are full.
Yeah.
The police search the vehicle and they never find anything because they don't think that the lockers have got anything in because they think, well, no one's going to put anything in there. But I always wonder that they're going to get caught on a narrow road.
Yes. I was about to say, now I'm guessing...
On a road sign.
They're no wider than the door mirrors. So actually...
Yeah.
You're probably okay. But yeah, I do look at them and go, I wonder how often you cuff those on something by accident. But probably not at all because you take the mirrors
those
off.
Those protruding road signs... Which you sometimes see the edges bent of because a truck has clocked them or a van's got them, and you think, "Oh,
yeah." I always get what hit that.
Yeah,
how in that position where it's like it's 3 feet in on the pavement. It's like what hit that? What was overhanging enough to give that a good a good wallop enough to bend quite a thick metal sign. It's bizarre.
There's a road sign near us which has recently been replaced, and it's one of those ones that just sticks out the ground with two angle iron posts. Okay, and it's been taken out again almost immediately. I noticed it last week. And it's crooked in such a way that the two uprights now look like the legs of a flamingo. Because they're kind of... You know, flamingos have backwards knees?
Yes.
I think we've talked about this before, because it still wrecks my middle-aged head. It's like, why do they hinge the other way? But, yeah, the sign just looks like it's been flamingoed, where someone's kicked the back of your knees at the urinal really hard and you've gone down off of school. Bullying spec.
Now, we should start to move this towards the exit. Oh, I was going to say, I was just looking at my notes, because I'd written down that bloody white S-type to mention that Jag that's been vandalised in a Stephen King style. But also, just while I'm here... I was at the supermarket the other day near us, and as I was going to pay, I saw this, you know, sort of attractive older lady, I'd say, in her mid-50s, maybe a bit older.
Wonderful.
But in yoga gear, and clearly, you know, she spent a lot of time in the yoga studio.
Okay.
I was like, oh, there's an attractive older lady. That's great. Nice. I mean, I say older, I mean, I'm closing in on 50, but a bit older. But for me, her attractiveness was magnified significantly when I went out to the car park and saw her getting into her car.
Oh. Was it a big
Can
saloon?
Can you even begin to guess what it
Tell
was?
Tell me it was a big saloon.
No. No. Oh. That would have been good, but no.
What was her car?
Sporty.
So was she that sort of era of lady where they did buy sporty coupes and things?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think if this had been 50 years ago, or 40 or 50 years ago, she'd have had a Scimitar or something.
Oh, did she have a new Mark V Supra, current-shaped Supra?
Interesting guess. No, I don't know. I would have possibly not enjoyed that as much as the fact that what she actually had was an almost brand-new dark green Jaguar F-Type.
Oh, nice.
Mm. That's the noise I pretty much made in my head, at least. Oh, attractive older yoga lady. What an interesting choice of car.
Yoga lady in the Jag. And we know that the first Gen F-Type looks so much better than the facelifted one.
Well, this was a facelift one, but, you know, I suppose maybe she traded. She had one, she liked it, but fancied a newer one.
Ooh.
And stuck with the facelift.
I think
that facelift's okay. It works well in dark colours.
It sounds pretty sexy from where I'm sat, Rich. I have to be
honest.
It
was good. It was a nice thing to see. Yeah. I was just like, you're well, good, well met here. Madam, you've chosen an interesting car.
When I was seeing my parents, I always look for Somerset spec cars. Not as many as I was expecting. You know, usually see an Orion or a Sierra. They are definitely thinning out. But I do see a lot of two-door RAV4s, the early ones.
Oh.
The really short, stubby ones, which do look pleasantly short. I like them. And I saw also a Land Cruiser. The two-door Land Cruiser, fairly modern one, like maybe 5 years old. They look like somebody's done it themselves. The profile looks like...
Do,
it looks like a hurried homologation car. I think that's... But in a good way.
It's true.
I like it. Yeah. I'm drawn to it. But make no mistake, it just looks a bit awkward.
Yeah, no, I think they look a bit... they look like an engineering test mule, where it's like a next generation of a smaller car is under there, but they've hidden it by cutting up a Land Cruiser. There's only so much they can do to the proportions. So, yeah, they're odd, aren't they?
They
really are odd. I mean, there's sort of something quite appealing about them, but it's a bizarre-looking car.
But it's still got Mitsubishi Pajero Evo vibes, which... It's one of those cars. I've never driven one. I'm hoping to drive one soon or off of the Late Break Show and all.
Are you?
Yeah, I am. I'm hoping to drive a standard one and then one that's been heavily breathed on. And I can't wait.
Wheelbase.
Short wheel.
I can't wait to see you. wheelbase. Right, well, let's bring this one into land, shall we? Before we go, though, three things to tell you. The first one is Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Hale and Pace Show.
Oh, gosh.
In which Johnny can't be asked reviewing cars this week and just puts on a VHS of an 80s sketch show. Two middle-aged men pretending to be bouncers. If that's not to your taste, there's always The Late Break Show. Lots of excellent videos on there. Enjoyed your Greg James chat. That was very nice. Oh. I watched that on Sunday evening while I was cooking.
Thanks, chap.
It was delightful.
Well, yeah, it's had some lovely feedback. It's quite long form, but it's, you know, it's kind of honest. And no, I really enjoyed it. So many thankings. This is the bit where I get a chance to promote what's coming up on the channel. And I've actually, because I'm so sleep deprived and idiotic, I actually don't know what's going out. Oh, I think I know what's going out. There's another chat with a human, a car based human, that is your friend and my recent acquaintance, Jay Ward from Disney Pixar.
Ah, oh, yes, lovely Jay.
My chat with him at the Porsche Rennspoet event in America. And he's talking me round the creation of the characters in Cars, and then specifically Sally Carrera, and then they built that real Sally Carrera using a chopped up 996.
Yeah, did they shorten the wheelbase?
They shortened the wheelbase significantly. Wheel. And they did, and it was really he's such a passionate
one
guy.
Can only speculate on what that involved, but yeah. He is he's a lovely man and very passionate about animation and cars, and
yeah, he's had some great cars, so we have a
top chap. Oh well, I heartily endorse that one then, because
because you know he's a good one, he's a good egg. So we got here, we've got that, that will be out by the time you listen to this, but also off of another barn find as well, like Aston Martin. Like, you know Aston Martins, like 70s ones, AMV8S specifically.
Mm.
Yeah, did a barn find. A really nice, lovely, quite sinister spec 1978 Aston Martin V8S. And I actually did that barn find the day after interviewing Freddie Tavares. And Freddie casually, during the interview, said, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, well, I've got to film a barn find tomorrow. He said, oh, I've got a spare day. Do you mind if I come? And I said, yeah, if you want to come, you're more than welcome. I'll splash you a meal deal and buy a coffee. And sure enough, he came and helped me. Had a fantastic day pulling out and trying to start this Aston Martin that's been in the family for many years and years and years.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that's that. But you've got news as well, Richard. Haven't you?
Yeah, I know. I was going to talk about this a bit more in this show, but we're coming to the end now. Yes, my new book, Boring Car Trivia 4, is out at last. And I've been mentioning it for months and how I'm working on it. Well, it's finally done. It's on sale. Get it from Amazon as a paper book or paperback, don't you?
But it's still a book.
Or
you're not
an
lying.
E-book. It is a book, paper book. Maybe we should just say that in future. Yeah, it's full of arcane information about cars. Lots of things. I can tell you, speaking as we just were about F-types, what Jaguar called the F-type internally and in marketing, and what inspired some of the interior details on that car. Story that you might like about the Porsche Boxster in its original form, like you've got, the most bizarre accessory that it was available with from the factory when it was new. The weird reason why the Lotus Emira has a heated rear window, and the reason why the Aston Martin Vantage, the old supercharged one, twin supercharged one from the 90s, owes a debt of gratitude to a scrapped Peugeot 505.
I love.
So there's lots of stuff in there that is strange and unusual, and hopefully you don't already.
You
know.
Left me yearning for more, and I say this.
Well, no, that was the hope.
It doesn't sound sincere, but it is sincere. They're great. I really enjoyed the trivia.
Yeah, it's taken ages, but hopefully it is full of stuff that people won't already know, or more detail on things that people do vaguely know. And a big thank you to everybody who listens to this podcast, who sent suggestions or sort of half-remembered things that I've been able to follow up on to put in the book. It's been a bit of a labour of love, but it's out now, and if you are at a loose end and a bit bored, why not go and buy it? It's only $6.99. I mean, that's a big coffee and a sandwich, isn't it? So It's not.
It's brilliant. It's not. Can somebody please go and buy that this Boring Car Trivia Volume 4? If you've got the other three, it's offensive to stop now. You need to keep going.
It is. Your set won't be complete. And hopefully, if you're interested in boring trivia, that's the kind of thing that will bother you.
Yes.
Or just go straight in at 4 and then work your way backwards. Oh. There's no plot, so you will know exactly
it's
what's
like
going on.
It's like how I would watch Star Wars, for example. And but have no clue.
I suppose that is sort of how you're supposed to.
Oh, don't start.
Let's not get
no,
down
No, don't
that.
Start, no.
Anyway, Boring Car Trivia 4 on sale now on Amazon. If it is a paperwork, said it again. What an absolute arsehole.
Paperwork,
paperback, or a paperwork or an ebook. I'd get the paperback because it's, you know, it's just something nicer about paperbooks. And the third thing I've got to say is actually from a listener. It's a bit of a follow up to last week. Was it? I said that Ray of Light by Madonna is a cover version. Yeah. Of an old folk song from the 70s.
Yes.
A Patreon called David Cars, or Cars, I don't know. Sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. He said one of the writers of the original Ray of Light, it was called Sepherin, they surprised him on some surprise type ITV show in the 90s. He had no idea, and David says, from memory, they presented him with a chunky royalties check.
What?
That's amazing. He didn't know that. I haven't bothered to check this is accurate, but I'm going to go with David's memory of it. That, yeah, one of the writers of what became Ray of Light didn't know that Madonna, the world's biggest pop stars, had turned his track into something contemporary.
I'd like to meet Madonna one day and talk to her about Cars, but that's not going to happen. So stay tuned.
Well,
to this podcast.
And, you know, it's not with that attitude, it's not. I mean, you know, once you've, once you've got Liam Howlett on, then the next one can be an idle chat with Madonna. That would be amazing to this week on The Late Break Show. Our idle chat is with, you know, Madonna.
Yeah. Sade's going to pop her head down the
door. She's been itching to talk about Cars all this time. Because, you know, Greg James, it felt like in a way, when you chatted to him, he's uncorking something because he doesn't generally talk about Cars in his professional
He sent me a text message like 24 hours after the video had gone out because he did say, I think he won't mind me saying this, I was genuinely nervous, way more nervous than I was giving off to you of how this video would be received. And he said, I've read some of the comments and I feel like I've finally come out with my car personality and I'm happy to be out. Thanks for helping me come out. It's brilliant, isn't it? I love that. It's weird because so many people are like, I didn't expect him to have good car taste. Yeah. I just thought he'd be driving some sort of wanky new car on credit.
Yeah, no, it's... They're out there.
They're out
people
there.
Like us. They're
sweet,
out there.
Sweet, sweet guys. Knows, sweet.
Maybe Madonna is one of them.
Sweet, sweet ladies. Sade, if you're listening, phone's still on. All right.
Oh, of course. I mean, well, the grail of guests.
I've actually got
for this
I've got a
podcast or your show.
With Sade's wankle fanaticism, I've got the perfect car coming up that I need her to come and experience with me. I would love that. And it's not that far from where she lives, I believe. It's not that far from Gloucestershire. Yeah. So.
Right then. Well,
her love
we
is
really
deep.
Should wrap this
We've wrapped this up for 6 minutes, I think, haven't we?
We've been wrapping it up since yesterday. Yeah. But we will do it now by saying thank you for listening, and we'll do it all again next week. Until then, goodbye.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, mate. Bye.
Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. T-shirts, stickers, mugs, T-shirts, stickers. We might do hats soon, we haven't decided. This may come as a surprise, but Smith and Sniff have merchandise. You won't believe your eyes. Smith and Sniff have merchandise. Sadly, we don't do pies. But Smith and Sniff have merchandise. One day we might sell ties. Smith and Sniff have merchandise.
Yeah.
No one warns you about this stuff. Oh yeah, when you get older, you're just going to feel more tired all the time.
Yeah, it is a thing.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.